Yehuda says that on Yom Tov, on holidays, that means Pesach, Shavuot, and Sukkot, it is a mitzvah, a chiyuv, compulsory for a person to make his wife and family happy. There's a pasuk, V'samachta b'chagecha, you should be happy on the holidays, these three holidays, make your wife and children happy. The Yehuda says, how does a person go about bringing simcha to his family? The Yehuda says, well, what brings simcha? Wine. You drink a lot of wine, it brings simcha. The Yehuda says, that's for men. How about the women and children? Especially the women. The Yehuda says, women, there's only one way to make them happy, and that's by buying them new clothes. You buy a woman new clothes, that to her is a happy holiday. So this is a mitzvah, to have new clothes bought for a wife and family. The Yehuda says now that the time that Beit HaMikdash existed, then simcha was only by eating meat. Simcha meaning a festive occasion, a meal with meat in it, that is simcha. Since the Beit HaMikdash was destroyed, since then, simcha is only with wine. That's what the Gemara says here. Now, it is not mentioned here why. There is a very hidden midrash. It's not a regular midrash. It's one of the extremely hidden ones, and to be very frank, I have spent, honestly, 20 years looking for the midrash. I never found it until the Eretz Yisrael last summer. I found a source in a very old encyclopedia. I forget the name of the midrash. It's one of the midrashim which are practically unheard of. And there, the statement is brought that this famous statement, which I had heard as a child yet, my father, Lashon, my grandfather, Lashon, but I had always searched for the origin. Statement is that since the Beit HaMikdash was destroyed, the taste, the rich taste of meat, was taken from the meat and put into the bones. You cannot get the pleasure of the original pleasure of meat that existed during the time of the Beit HaMikdash. That is gone now, and if you want that pleasure, that extremely good taste, you'll find it by sucking out the marrow of the bones. That will give you an idea of what the taste of meat was like. Well, this is naturally fact. But there's also a joke said about this, that there was an old man once that was sitting and eating a meal and was eating a plate of meat, and he was crying. The rabbi saw him, and he asked, why are you crying? He said, I'm crying because of the Churban Beit HaMikdash. The holy temple was destroyed, and there's no more taste to the meat. Meat, it's only in the bones. So the rabbi said, you're not crying over the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash, you're crying over the destruction of your teeth. You haven't got any more teeth, so you can't chew on the bones. That's what you're crying about. Because the fact is that for the marrow of the bones, there you will find a semblance of what the real taste of meat was like. Now, the Gemara says that it is so. There is no longer that rich taste, former taste of meat, and therefore, what previously was the pause for simcha now has been transferred to wine. Wine can bring simcha to a person, to the heart of man. Women are not supposed to drink wine. Women are supposed to be given clothes, new clothes for the holidays, the chagim. The Gemara goes into a series of matters of advice on worldly matters, local matters, business, personal matters. And in other words, we deviate now from the regular halachot laws. The reason is that the Torah teaches midot, character also, and advice at the same time. The Gemara says many times we are told advice in the Gemara about business matters, and this not only to lead us properly in business, but also to show people who are businessmen and think that the rabbis of the Gemara were ones who knew nothing about life. They were immersed completely in the study of Torah and nothing else. Here the Gemara shows us the rabbis of the Gemara knew more about business matters, more about worldly matters than the wisest of these businessmen, diplomats, and so on. The Gemara says that Rabbi Akiva taught his son, Rabbi Yehoshua, a number of items. First, he said, do not sit and study Torah in the center of the city, which means in an open place where people pass by. Simply because if you want to study and concentrate, you cannot do so if you have people passing by who may interrupt you. You must have a place that is set aside for that purpose. Place to study Torah is in a Beit Midrash. You can't do it where you can be interrupted every moment, because you must have a mobility, a opportune place where you can sit, concentrate, and learn without interruption. Secondly, do not live in a city as if you have a choice. Do not live in a city where the leaders of the city are chachamim, tamidei chachamim, where the mayor, the politicians are tamidei chachamim, because it's true that they will sit and study Torah. It's wonderful. But at the same time, they will be so engrossed in their learning that they will become immune to the problems of the local populace. And there's a place for everything, for everyone. It's good to have tamidei chachamim in the yeshiva. But as far as leaders of the city, you have to have those who will devote their time to solving the problems of the population. Therefore, live in a city where you have ones who are not Talmidei Chachamim as the leading figures in that city. Advice two, do not enter your home suddenly without knocking. And Kol Shekein, surely do not enter your friend's home without knocking. That is extremely improper and polite. And it can cause embarrassment. You might walk into your house when the family, one member is doing something which is not modest at the time, and to walk in suddenly, or they're not dressed properly, so it's embarrassing, it is not polite. And that's why even to one's own home, before walking in, a person must knock first. Never go without shoes. This for a number of reasons. In fact, this law is so strict that the Gemara says a person should sell everything he has, especially one who has learned, in order to buy shoes. So the most important garment is shoes. And it's not that simple. We find that the beracha we say in the morning, the one beracha we say in the morning for clothing, in particular, which article of clothing is shoes. She'asar li kol tzarki, that beracha is blessing Hashem for shoes. But if you say the beracha, that means you're going to wear shoes throughout. There are other reasons why a person should never go without shoes, and of course this is the more serious vein where it invites chas v'shalom tragedy, because the only time a person goes without shoes is when he is chas v'shalom in abel, he's in mourning. Therefore, this is something that should be avoided at all costs. Shoes must only be worn except to bed. There too, the Gemara says elsewhere, a person wants to feel a taste of death, slight taste of death. What it tastes like, what it feels like, by sleeping with shoes on, you might not detect it, but there is that slight taste there, which means that a person should always wear shoes except to bed. Besides, you make the sheets dirty. The Kiva added too, always eat breakfast, whether it is summer or winter. No matter what the weather is like, a person might have an excuse that at certain times of the year, he can get along without food in the morning. The Akiva advised, always eat breakfast, because the breakfast will help you against being harmed by the cold in the winter and against being harmed by the sun, the heat in the summertime. Generally, then it says that breakfast saves a person from 83 different types of diseases. The most important meal is breakfast. And this means, of course, breakfast means not just to eat food, but to wash, specifically bread. Breakfast without bread is not considered breakfast. Better a little bit of bread than a heavy meal without bread. To be Akiva added to that it is better that you make your Shabbat into a weekday, Chas v'Shalom, that means a meal. Eat a weekday meal. Now, we know that a Jew always saves his money in order to buy the best food for Shabbat. There is no comparison between a weekday meal and a Shabbat meal. Rabbi Akiva said it is better to have a weekday meal on Shabbat, that means a light meal, a cheap meal, rather than to have to beg or borrow the money for the Shabbat meal. Spend your own for the little that you can get your own money, rather than to beg or borrow in order to have a better meal on Shabbat. Despite this, the Gemara adds later on that there must still be a difference between the Shabbat meal and the weekday meal, at least a small difference. The Gemara asks, what is that difference? A person cannot afford to buy fish. The Gemara says, then buy little sardines. But something in the family of fish for Kavod Shabbat, no matter how little you can afford. Rabbi Akiva said, taught his son, try your best, strive when dealing in business to go in partnership with a person who has a streak of good fortune. One who is successful at business, when you go in a partnership with him, you will succeed too. or deal with him, anything, selling, buying, rather than one whose fate, whose mazal, is chas v'shalom bad. Attach yourself to one whose mazal is good, it will rub off upon you. This is not chas v'shalom a superstition. The Gemara learns this from Eel, so that if possible, a person should try to become partners with or do dealings with those who are successful. This was Rabbi Akiva to his son. And the Gemara says that when Rabbi Akiva was imprisoned, Romans had him imprisoned just before they put him to death. Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai Zal, his student, came to the prison and he said to Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi, teach me Torah. Rabbi Akiva said, I will not teach you. Why? Because naturally, if he was caught teaching him, then they could put Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai Zal in prison too. Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai Zal said to Rabbi Akiva, you don't teach me Torah now. I'm going to tell my father, Rabbi Yochai, and he's going to report you to the king and get you in trouble. This is a very strange type of threat. Rabbi Akiva answered, my son, do you think that I don't want to teach you Torah? Much more than a calf wants to be nursed, a cow wants to nurse. Meaning much more than a student wants to learn Torah, the rabbi would certainly much more than that teach him Torah. It's just that it's dangerous now. The Mishmur Yechai is all answered, but who is in danger? It's the calf that's in danger. You're not in danger to teach me Torah, you're in prison anyhow. I'm the one that's in danger, and I am willing to accept that danger because I want to study Torah. Well, what did he mean when he said, I'm going to report you to the king, my father report you to the king and get you in trouble? If it was, not chas v'shalom disrespectfully. Abinazal explains this in a Kabbalah term, very deep Kabbalah, but they will take only the simple explanation. Simply it meant, Abinazal says that a rabbi must teach a student Torah. If he doesn't, it's considered gizela. He is stealing his rights. A student has a right to learn Torah, and the rabbi is depriving him of that right if he doesn't teach him. Therefore, the Abinazal says that the penalty is for the rabbi refuses to teach Torah, then he may be imprisoned in the sense he receives a penalty equal to imprisonment. Lashes, or even worse, you don't want to use the exact term. So Shmuel Yechayezal hinted at that, report you to the king, meaning that the rule is that you're supposed to be imprisoned for not teaching Torah. You're depriving me of Torah. Rabbi Akiva answered, of course I would teach you Torah. It's not that I want to deprive you, chas v'shalom, just that I have pity upon you that you should not be placed in jeopardy. Would be risking your life. Shmuel Yechayezal answered, it is me that is in danger, and you need not worry about my sakana. That's my affair. If I am willing to take a risk for the sake of the study of Torah, then you should go along with me. Rabbi Akiva said, fine. He said, take these words of advice. In the future, if anyone, if you want to be hung, then be hung on a large tree. He used these words in sort of code, so in case he'd be heard by the Romans, they wouldn't know he was teaching Torah. But this was coded message, meaning if you want people to accept your words, if you tell them a law of Torah, a deed, you want them to accept it, don't say it yourself. Quote it the name of the origin, the name of the rabbi who said it. A large tree, meaning bring the biggest rabbi who said it as your source of information, then they will surely accept it. They will not refute it to try to argue it. Always quote the origin. That's general. That's Vatican. That says one who quotes the origin, the name of the person who said it, he brings Mashiach closer. And here, if you want these words to be accepted, not only quote the origin, but quote the highest rabbi who said it, so that they will not question, will accept it much more quickly. You'll save the time of arguing about it. Secondly, you teach your son. See that you teach him in a sefer that's been examined previously, that there are no errors in it. Because when a person, a child, learns Torah and the print was done carelessly, there are errors in the print. A child's mind is one that absorbs very solidly. And once he absorbs an error, it's very hard to get that error out of his mind. He reads something where there's a mistake in print, the statement is wrong, and then trying to get that error rooted out of his mind, you find difficulty because the child's mind takes in something. It stays there permanently. So before you allow your child to learn from any sefer of Torah, be sure that the sefer is a new one, a one that's been examined and has been revised where the errors were removed. Third, he said, do not cook in the same pot that your friend cooked. This means, the letter says, advice. Do not marry a divorcee because you will find that there's a mixture that's unpleasant. She'll always be thinking of her first husband and always making comparisons. Say that where you are better than her first husband, nothing will be mentioned. But should there be a fault found in you, she'll bring up the point, my first husband was better in this respect. Or in general, she could find the general life with you not as pleasant as with the first one, but this could do a lot of harm to a harmony in married life. Therefore, try to avoid a divorcee, at least during her husband's life. If he is not alive anymore, then there is a much smaller risk of her bringing him up or making comparison because thing that's gone. Well, Rabbi Akiva said this, do not marry a divorcee, speaking about the fault lying with the woman. Why should this apply to a woman being advised not to marry a man who divorced his wife? He too will make comparisons and be bitter for her. The answer is that according to Hebrew law, Torah law, the law of divorce is that a man can divorce his wife at will, whatever he wishes, whatever he pleases, against her will. The wife can never divorce a husband at all. So, therefore, where the man has divorced his first wife, he cannot make comparisons anymore. He divorced her because she wasn't good, he didn't like her at all. There's no problem. There's no danger out of thinking about the qualities of his first wife. But this was only in those times. Nowadays that we have the chedem Rabbeinu Gershon, when Rabbeinu Gershon gave out this chedem, that no man can divorce a woman against her will, and this same advice applies to women too. Since a man divorces a wife, not against her will, but with the consent of both, or whether they were compelled to become divorced for a different reason, then the same advice applies to women. Do not marry a man who is divorced, because he will make the comparison, and it can make life bitter. This is what is called the hidden term, cooking in the same pot that your friend cooked. Rabbi Ishmael, Rabbi Yossi taught Rabbi three things. One, do not cause a defect upon yourself. A mum means a physical defect. Don't make yourself a physical defect. What does that mean? Do not go into court against three people. Yourself on one side, as the plaintiff or defendant, against the opposing side is a party of three. Because many times they'll be unscrupulous and they'll break it up into a party of one. One of them will go into court against you. The other two will become witnesses for him. You automatically lose the case that way. So if you're going against three, you'll lose the case. Arrange to have, if it's a case like that, avoid going to court. Make a settlement because there's still better than going into court where you are sure to lose. Second, do not stand over an item in a store, in a shop, looking at it, staring at it, studying it, when you don't have money with you to buy it. You arouse the excitement on the part of the shopkeeper, the storekeeper. The anxiety tries his best to sell it to you with the hope. You build up his hopes that he's going to make a sale. Well, you know certainly that you don't have money with you, you can't buy it. This, of course, means, too, well, you know definitely you're not going to buy a certain item, even if you do have money. Well, I mean definitely, because in many cases where a person thinks he's definite, the good salesman changes his mind. Where a person certainly will not buy this item, he should not stand there looking at it, because he will cause a sadness or hot feeling on the part of the storekeeper, thought he might have had a sale, and turned out to be a letdown. Third item was the case of carefulness about the laws of Midah in many details, which of course are to it they go into now. But these laws were taught in those days with such stringency, they were passed down to us with and its strictness, and to remember always that the laws of Midah are the laws of Karet, Chas v'Shalom. How careful a person should be about the mitzvah of mikveh for the wife, much, much more so than mikveh for a man. And to be well acquainted with the laws of the debt too, you should not be trapped into doing something unwittingly that might be wrong, Chas v'Shalom. Human as a person should not go out alone at night. Because the Sheidim who are found in the streets seek out a person going alone. They will generally not attack people going in twos and pairs. A person going alone, they seek them out and they attack them, Chas v'Shalom. Yemena says this was up to a certain point, because the fact was that the leader of the Sheidim has an army of 180,000 angels of destruction and Jesus' army out in the streets, and everyone has permission from heaven to damage any person they meet. So there was a time once when they constituted a real danger. Till one day, Yemena says that the Hanina ben Dosa was out in the street, and this Sheida met him, and she said to the Hanina ben Dosa, "If not for the fact that in heaven I hear the announcement saying, be careful, beware of the Hanina, my son, of his Torah, how precious he is in the eyes of heaven, then I would have put your life in danger." The Hanina answered, "If I am considered so important in heaven, I hereby decree that you should never come into civilized areas anymore. You stay in forests, jungles, deserts, but never come into civilization again." She pleaded with him. She said, "You're a good-hearted person. Have pity on me. Allow me a little bit time. I shouldn't be locked up in these desert areas." He said to her, "Fine, I'll allow you Friday nights and Tuesday nights, because these are two nights of the week when Jews generally stay at home. They don't go out on Friday nights. But Tuesday nights, too, for some reasons, they were unaccustomed to going out." So from that time on, the Yemena says the warning was given out. A person should never go out alone on Friday nights or Tuesday nights. Many years later, she went out and she met Abaye alone. She said to Abaye, "If not for the fact that in heaven they announced, beware of Abaye and his Torah, I would have put your life in danger now." Abaye said to her, "If I am that important in heaven, then I decree that you should never again come into civilization ever. Meaning even these two nights which were granted to you, you should be deprived of now." There was no way of her bargaining for any permission, which means that they no longer jeopardize civilized areas. The Yemena asks, "But we do see that Sheidim are present. At times they are found in cities." The Yemena answers, "These are not regular visitors. The armies of the Sheidim are outside of the cities. Once in a while, they overstep the boundary. One of their horses runs off. They have to run it to retrieve it, which means it's accidentally that they come into the city. But ordinarily, there are no Sheidim permitted to come into civilized areas. They are found only in desolate, isolated places." The Yemena says that the Rav gave advice to his student, Ravasi. He told him, "Do not live in a city where the head of the city is either a Talmid Chacham, as you said before, or a doctor, a Havdil, because they both, the Havdil, are so occupied with their own type of studies that they are forced to ignore the needs of the public. Second, do not live in a city where there are no guards, horses, dogs, guard dogs to protect properties, meaning no dogs to guard the properties, no horses to chase after thieves if they do steal, because naturally this will invite thieves to that place. Third," he said, "do not marry two wives, because if you marry two wives, it's very possible they might become very friendly and plan something harmful to you, poison you, or anything like that. If you are going to marry more than one wife, marry three. Because generally, out of the three, you'll have one that'll be loyal. So in case two of them will make an evil plan against you, the third one will reveal that plan to you. You'll be safe. And I've said to Afghan, another student, you may work at the lowest trade, and he's stripping a dead animal of its hide. Turn a dead animal inside out, but do not turn your words inside out. Which means that when you say a word, it should be the same in your mind as on your tongue. If you give a word, it should be kept. Your yes should be a yes, a no should be a no. Do not change your word. Also, strip an animal, which is a very low type of trade, in the middle of the marketplace. Do not be ashamed. As long as that is your trade, that is your work, you're getting wages for it, there's nothing to be ashamed about. It's still an honest living. Rather than do something dishonest, where you might feel more professional on a higher level, but since there might be a trace of dishonesty or begging, borrowing, it is better to work in an honest trade, no matter how low it may be. I never say that it's not fit for my kavod. There's no bigger kavod than earning an honest dollar. If you go out on a trip, no matter how short the trip is, always take food with you. You never know if you might come to a place where there'll be no food available. You might arrive at night, the stores are closed. You might come to a place where there's no hotel or inn to buy food, or you might not have a kosher supply somewhere. Always take food with you. You'll be safe and certain. Rav said to his son, Rabbi Chiya, this advice. Do not take medicines, which means do not take drugs. Any type of drugs, narcotics. Two reasons. First place, they are very habit-forming. Therefore, they can prove dangerous. Plus, the fact that they can prove dangerous financially. A person takes drugs in a habit forming, he is forced into a new expense that increases as time goes by. It reaches a point that's more than he can afford. And this can lead him to a life of crime. This sounds like a statement that was made a few years ago. This was said by Rav nearly 2,000 years ago. There's a forewarning at that time for what's so obvious today. And I've also said, do not take big steps, because a person who takes long steps affects his eyesight. As we said, the eyesight is affected by a long step, and it's corrected by looking at the candles at the time of Kiddush on Friday night. Do not have a tooth pulled at all costs. Treat it as much as possible. It's a living thing, trying to keep a tooth as long as a person is alive. Unless, chas v'shalom, it's so affected, and it's impossible to keep it. But if there's a slightest chance of treating a tooth, have confidence and hope that this tooth can be cured. Apparently, for these words, it seems that if a person is careful, there's no reason to ever lose any tooth. That's what appears to be the words in the commentaries. Well, at least the lesson is that a person could certainly keep teeth much longer than dentists advise. So never take the advice of a dentist to pull a tooth until you exhausted every possible means of saving it, sparing it. And do not start up with goyim, because there are ways, chas v'shalom, that they could get back at Jews. So avoid open confrontation with goyim as much as possible. This was the advice of Rav. Rabbeinu HaKadosh told his sons the following words of advice. Do not live in a certain city, he mentioned, but this means any city where this holds true, where the people there are letzanin, pranksters, jokesters who like to play jokes and pranks, who kid around too much, because the Torah warns against letzanut. The first sentence in Tehillim, King David starts Tehillim with the words, Ashrei Ha'ish. Fortunate is that person who does not stay in the company of Leitzim, those who like to joke around too much, because this is not a place for joking, meaning this world is a place of seriousness. A person should take life seriously. Simcha of mitzvah, yes, certainly, says, Ivdu et Hashem b'simcha, serve Hashem with simcha, but not the kind of simcha that's wrong or the loot. Therefore, he said, the city where these people are in abundance, avoid staying close to them. Avoid even living in that city. Secondly, he said, do not sit on the bed of a goya. What does that mean? One thing it means, do not go to sleep without saying Kriyat Shema. That's like a goy goes to bed, goes right to sleep. A Jew, before going to bed, is supposed to say Kriyat Shema, is supposed to offer his soul up to Hashem. V'yadcha afkid ruchi. I offer my soul to Hashem for safekeeping. Hashem ker emet. Another interpretation is, and the meaning behind it was, because of the story of Rav Barcha, who once was about to sit in the bed of a goya, and he realized that this goya had killed her son. Her child was dead, and she waited for him to sit down on that bed, then she could accuse him of killing her child. Therefore, you cannot trust places where these goyim might falsely accuse a Jew of such types of murder. Rabbi HaKadosh also said to his children, be very careful not to ever try to avoid paying taxes to the government or try to smuggle goods through customs, because eventually you may be caught and the fines and penalties might cost you so many times over what you expected to gain by saving these taxes that you could possibly lose your entire fortune, Chas v'Shalom. This, in addition to the fact that there is a law, the Torah, forbidden to steal from Goyim. There's a law that you must obey the laws of the land. A Torah law, which says you must obey the laws of the land. Aside from this, is also the advice, do not be foolish and think you may gain anything, because the loss involved could be manyfold that of a slight gain. Now, Papa said, do not come into a house where cats are found. A house where there is a cat. Do not go into that house without shoes, because a cat is the one animal that has the power to defeat a snake in battle. It kills a snake and eats it. Well, snakes generally have small germs, bacteria. These are very dangerous. And if a person goes into this house or walks in that house without shoes, the germs attach themselves to the feet and it can cause untold harm. The Gemara says, on the other hand, a person should not go into a house where there are no cats at all, because of the fact that he might be attacked by a snake, and he can have the same type of risk to his life. A house where there are cats, you will generally not find any snakes. It's the greatest precaution against snakes. The Gemara says now that there are three types of people that a person should not start up with, be jealous of, try to do harm, or three types, rather, of kitanim, katan, young. Three types of young at the start. One is a young goy, another is a small snake, the third is a young stoot, because you never know what the future holds in store for them. This young goy might someday become a governor or a king. They might take it out against all Jews, Chas v'Shalom. The Gemara tells a story of such a case like that, where the Jews started with a young goy, and then they caused them a lot of damage later on to the entire city. A small snake has a long memory. When he grows older, he remembers the place where he was harmed, and he comes back to take revenge. A young student who was mistreated, he becomes older and more learned and more advanced than those who had mistreated him before. He now comes back to play them down, to show them up that they know little, and he can cause much more embarrassment than was caused them when he was young. Even as his further advice is that when you go out to do business and you return from you went to a different, distant place to purchase certain merchandise, and you came back, while the dust is still on your shoes, it means you had no time to rest even, get rid of what you bought. Never hold on to merchandise long. Sell it as quickly as you can. Or when you come back, go right to the marketplace and sell it. It is not healthy to hold on to goods and hope that the prices will go up. Also, if you're in doubt about selling a thing at a certain price, first sell it, and then be sorry later that you sold it too quickly, because you find you could have gotten a higher price. It is better to be sorry having sold a thing at a smaller profit than to deeply regret the fact that you didn't sell it and you stuck with that goods completely later on. small regret compared to the big regret of not being able to sell it at all and lose even your principal investment. Advice to a businessman. The person comes into your store to buy any kind of item, food, for example, which has to be placed into a bag, to a container, or any kind of merchandise put into a package. Before you package this item or these items, first take the cash, put it into your pocket, and then package the items and give it to the customer. Because if you don't, you'll always find yourself in a controversy, an argument with the customer as to whether the money had been paid or not. First, make sure you have the money in your pocket, and then open the bag and place the merchandise into it. Rabbi Yochanan said a number of items of advice. When you go out to battle, never be the first to go out. Be the last. Try to be the last one on the battle lines so that when the time comes to return, you'll be the first one into the city. If you are victorious, then you get the first gala, the first cheers, biggest gifts. You'll be the last one killed and the first one rewarded for this victory. So as a matter of advice, safety advice, try to stay in the rear lines always because you'll end up first. Where it counts most, the hidden message here is, the rear lines means be the lowest of the top, the tail of a lion, because you'll still be part of the lion which is first, uppermost. Emunah Sadiq, Amir V'Amir.